Good morning. It is good to be back with you this week. If you were not here last week, just pretend. We were out of town last week on a ministers and wives retreat up in Cannon Beach. It's the second year we've got a chance to go to it, and it was just a great, refreshing weekend. It's kind of funny. Last year we went, and the weather was absolutely perfect the whole weekend. Sun shining, a little bit of wind, but not too bad. And I thought, wow, this Oregon coast is something. And this year we went, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and finally stopped raining about somewhere in the middle of communion on Sunday, which I thought was good timing. But we didn't get to enjoy the beach nearly as much this year, but enjoyed being around the other ministers and wives and just having a time to relax a little bit. And I'm thankful that Dale Lynch was able to be here with you guys last week and tell you about the work that the disaster relief crew is doing. Can't overemphasize how much good they do and how many times I've been a part of some disaster relief trip and show up to find giant stacks of their boxes everywhere of food and supplies and things. They do a really, really good work all over the country. So glad he was able to come and fill you guys in on that. Also glad for this past Thursday. And this is a project that Luis introduced us to last year or the year before. And Denise kind of took the helm of this year, organizing and all of that. Operation Christmas Child, which if you're not familiar with it, is run through Samaritan's Purse, which is the same organization that sent the doctor that got Ebola in Africa and came back and is now cured and speaking all over the place, who's a member of the church. But they also do Operation Christmas Child, where they send these Christmas boxes around the world, and it's up to us to buy the stuff and to put a little money into shipping and then to have time to pack it. And so I will tell you that Denise and me too, we're both a little curious about what kind of feedback we would get on this and what kind of involvement we would get. And so the tables were being set up by Denise and Beth and a couple others on Thursday morning, hoping that people would come to pack the boxes. And we were all very pleasantly surprised when there were, I'm guessing, around 30 or 35 people here Thursday evening to pack boxes, and enough stuff to pack 90 boxes full of things. So a very, very neat thing, and something I shared. Yeah, go ahead. If you didn't get a chance to, I think I saw on their website, they're still doing these through tomorrow, so you can look around the community, and if there's another place doing it. Have ours shipped out yet, or are they still back there? I guess in theory you could put a box back there if you're sneaky. But these will be going out pretty soon around the world, and it's just a really neat thing. But I shared with the adult Bible class this morning that I looked at our Facebook page yesterday, and I have these two pictures up on Facebook with a post about what we were doing, and it was somewhere around 25 or 26 people have liked it. Which on Facebook means you've seen it and you agree with it or appreciate it or whatever. And as I looked at that list of 25 people, I realized that there's 15 or 20 names I have no idea who they are, which is kind of a neat thing for our church to know that either people you're connected to or maybe somebody that showed up for our trunk or treat or just somebody that's seen the page saw that we're helping kids and likes that. And so it speaks well of the church, another way that hopefully we can reach out to our community. So thank you for being a part of that. I imagine it's something we will do again in the future because it was very well received. And I know that we don't get to see these boxes opened, and so we don't get the exciting Christmas side of this that you get with your own families. If you get a chance, go online, go onto YouTube, which is where you can find videos of lots of things you don't want to find videos of, but you can also find some good stuff. And if you will search Operation Christmas Child Delivery on YouTube, you can see some videos of what it's like when these kids get the boxes. And there is a level of excitement that for a lot of us we have not seen in our houses for a long time because the gifts aren't big enough or exciting enough anymore. And these kids are just genuinely excited to get these boxes. So I hope you'll take a look at that. All right, if you want to turn over to James chapter 1 in your Bibles, James chapter 1. I'm going to share one more thing. I'm going to share one more thing before we get into this, and I hope I don't embarrass Dave and Katie over here, but I'll do it anyway. I was sitting there at the beginning of communion, listening to Norm talk, watching Dylan getting ready to serve for the first time, watching Brett guide that and thinking that was really cool, and all these things going through my mind that I should have been emptying for communion. I hear Remington getting more and more unsettled. I'm pretty sure it was him. I know it was coming from behind me. And I hear, maybe it was Emily. I hear him getting more and more unsettled, and I was remembering those days because we had a lot of those days where child A or child B was just not really doing what you would like them to be doing at that moment. You can't make the formula fast enough. You spill the powder on the ground. You're trying desperately just to make everything go. And you're hoping, is anybody hearing this? And I hope I'm not being disturbing too much. And I thought to myself, just all the pressure that came with that. And the next thought I had as I'm sitting there was, good grief, I love having that sound in this room. I love the fact that there is a baby in this room, that there are some toddlers in this room that get a little bit unsettled, that put their parents into panic mode, and just know that I'm sure if it got loud enough, there would be some of us that would be like, all right, okay, it's time. But for the most part, we are so excited when there are young ones around here and more on the way, and just a great, great thing for this family. So know that we have been there, and we get it, and we don't mind. And it's okay, and whatever you guys got to do, you got to do, and it's all right. All right, having said that, I'm getting a little teary just thinking about it. Those are good days. James chapter 1, and we will begin in verse 9 of James chapter 1. The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position. The next thing that went through my mind was when we got to contribution time, and Dylan was coming my way with the basket. And I went into my own panic mode because I realized I have a sick child at home with a wife taking care of him this morning, and she is in charge of the checkbook. Now, I actually balance it, and I do all the computer side of things, and I pay the bills because it makes me laugh. She's an accountant, but she does those things during the week and doesn't want to be bothered with it at home. And so we figured out early in married life that I would do it and just try to keep her appraised of what's going on. For a while, and Mike and I joked about this the other day, I carried one check in my wallet. And I remember hearing a comedian talk about men and the one check in their wallet. We should just identify each other by the check number because we all had that one check for a long time. And then I gave up on the one check, and I realized as I was sitting here, and here comes Dylan with the basket for the first time, he's going to think his minister's a cheapskate because I got no check to put in this basket. And I'm going in a panic, and I pull my wallet out, and I open it up, and it empty as there's two receipts in there. And I thought, now what? And so I start going into the coat pockets, because men can do this, and I found $1 bill wrapped up. And so I put it, you know, of course, on the side where you can't read the one, and put it into the basket, hoping maybe Dylan thinks this is like a $1,000 bill going in. Realizing we shouldn't care about any of those things, but also laughing to myself because I know the first slide that's coming. And the first slide is, believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position. I don't know what you think of when you think high position. We watched a lot of football yesterday. I guess Ron is a half-empty glass kind of guy with half the teams lose. Half the teams win, too, so it's okay. As long as my half is on the good side and your half is on the good side. As I watch those games, I think maybe the high position is the head coach out there that everybody has to listen to. Later in the evening, as you start hearing news reports, maybe it's not the head coach because he's being questioned for the things he did or didn't do. We might think of high position as folks with money. Watched a TV show the other night, and these people pull up to a party in what's either a Ferrari or Lamborghini, I'm not sure which one. And I thought of throughout life, I would see one of those, and I would kind of stop what I was doing and be amazed by it. And then realize I'll never have one and go on with life. You might think of it as where you're at in the ladder in your company, if there are a lot of people beneath you or above you. I don't know how you think of high position. For most people, it's not humble circumstances that we connect with high position. We think of humble circumstances as low position. Think of it as something you want to get yourself out of, something you want to be a temporary thing, and then you move along into something better. And James tells us here that when you're in these humble circumstances, think of that as high position. Excuse me. Which brings the question of why would we think in that way? And if you think of the writings of Paul for a minute, when he talks about the things that he has pride in, he talks about the Father and he talks about Jesus and he talks about the fact that he finds himself imprisoned for spreading the gospel. He doesn't talk about the things that most people would think of as high position things to be thankful for. And I think immediately we have to be reminded that our scale is supposed to be a little bit different than the world around us. I found myself in packing those boxes on Thursday night thinking of all the toys that are going in these boxes that my kids would not be excited about. I got a jump rope at Target to put in one of the boxes because I'm trying to find something durable that'll fit in a shoebox. Got a couple of little foam balls to put in the boxes. I got a lot of Matchbox cars, which were just the best thing in the world when I was a kid. I got all these things to put in these boxes, and I thought, you know, if I put one of these boxes together for my own kids, I don't know if they'd be all that excited. And then I watched the videos of these kids around the world opening them up and so thrilled at what they get. And I wonder, where did we begin to lose that attitude? Because if I gave those boxes to my 4-year-old kids, they probably still would have been excited. Maybe at 5, still excited. And somewhere it begins to wear off a little bit, and it takes a lot more to make us happy now. It takes a lot more to get us excited. Think of how much money would have to be on the ground in the parking lot to make it worth your bending over. When you were a kid, that shiny penny was enough. Now, if that coin is not silver, you're not even thinking about it. And most likely, you're looking for a bill and hoping the Oregon wind doesn't pick it up and go. You want something more. And we have to rethink this idea of what our position is, because with God, those are not the things that matter. And honestly, with God, those are the things that oftentimes make things more complicated. Because when we have too much stuff, it's easy to get focused in on too much stuff. He continues in verse 10, "But the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wildflower. For the sun rises with scorching heat, withers the plant, its blossom falls, its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business." They will fade away. The stuff of this world, I hate to tell you, it's going to be gone. And you can try as much as you can to save. You can try as much as you can to put away. You can try as much as you can to decide what is going to be the thing that is incredibly worthwhile. And eventually, it's not going to matter a whole lot. I remember, and I will tell the story, my mom actually listens to these online, I've heard the other day, so I have to be careful with what I say. My mom, for a while, got into the Beanie Baby craze. I don't know if you remember these things, but they were little stuffed animals, about like so big, and they had these tags on their ears that told you their name and some story about them, and people started collecting them like they were of value. And what you find with value is what anyone is willing to pay for that thing. And so they got to be such a big deal, you didn't take the tag off the ear, which is everything that's wrong with having a stuffed animal. You got to take the tag off. Not only did you not take the tag off, they sold protectors that you would put over the tag on the ears of these Beanie Babies, and they decided these are worth different values. And so you would go and you would buy one for $7 or $8, and if you got the right one, it might be worth $200, or it might be worth $300, or it might be worth $50. And so my mom got into this Beanie Baby craze, and she had this drawer full of Beanie Babies. And I remember one time running across that drawer full of Beanie Babies in her house and thinking, what are you going to do with these? Maybe we could sell them. So I went and looked online. You can't get the $8 you put into it in the first place. The craze has come and the craze is gone. And if you planned your retirement plan around Beanie Babies, you're in a heap of trouble. Now, that's a small thing, but I think we can look around our world and see lots of things that are like this. This thing is just going to be the thing that will carry me on to the next big place. How many of us either are involved or know someone who is involved with some kind of multi-level marketing thing that's going to get them out of what they're in and get them into wealth? And does it happen for some? Yes. Does it happen for most? No. Most have a closet full of that stuff that didn't quite work out. High position and low position. And if we could take nothing else, then changing our mindset on these things, how much more godly could it make us? Because those things are going to fade away. The sun rises, scorching heat withers the plant. Its blossom falls, its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. That person has stood the test. And isn't that kind of what life is, really? It's a test. How are we going to react in certain situations? What are we going to do when things get hard? What are we going to go after? What's going to be important to us? How much concern do we put into things that don't matter a whole lot? How much concern do we put into the things that do matter? And for this person, they have stood the test. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. We are dragged away by our own desire. Which brings the question to us this morning, what is your desire? What is your desire? Because mine is worthwhile. Mine is set on the right thing. Mine is should not be questioned. Yours, on the other hand, I don't know about. I found myself Friday evening. Our kids go to the Eugene Christian School right down the road here. They had a fundraiser auction on Friday night. And I found myself walking around this auction thinking, there are things here I'd like to have. I'm not going to pay that for it. There's another thing that's a bargain. Maybe I'll pay that for it. There was a Volkswagen Bug in the corner of the room. They were selling keys to it. They had 40 keys to the Volkswagen Bug. One of them works. You could pay $50 for a key. I was tempted. Now why? It's a Volkswagen Bug. Not better than the car I drive. Interesting. Kind of a, you know, fits Eugene pretty well. I guess I put a big peace sign on the top of it or something. I wondered as I walked around that room, I kept running into things I didn't care about in the auction. And I thought, who would buy that? And then I would look at five names on the list. I'd say, well, number 147 would buy that. Who would care about this thing? Well, these folks would care about this thing. Each of us comes to this with our own desires. And then the question becomes, what do we do next? Do we control those desires, or do we allow those desires to take root and then turn into something more, turn into something worse? Because it's not God that's tempting us, and sometimes we might want to say that, and maybe it's not even the other guy that's tempting us. Something within us. Now, I will tell you, the other guy, Satan, is really good at knowing what that thing is within you and throwing you in the midst of some opportunities to use it. And too often we let him. Too often we welcome that. But as we have these desires of ours that take root, he says, then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Sin. We don't talk about sin a lot. It's unpleasant. We like to talk about good, happy things. We like to talk about the promises of God, which are later in the same chapter. We don't talk a lot about sin, but man, we have a sin problem. And again, much like my desires and your desires, my sin is something that we should deal with. And it's okay. And you should accept me. Your sin, that's a problem. And you got to get that in order. Now, that sounds crazy. And yet, that's how an awful lot of us operate. Your sin is something you've got to fix. My sin, that demands your patience. Because I don't understand some of those sins that I will see listed. They don't appeal to me. And so because of that, that's something that people just shouldn't struggle with. Oh, but gossip? Maybe that's more of a struggle. Disobedience to God? Maybe that's a little bit more of a struggle. And each of us has a sin that our desires lead us to. It's interesting. There are a lot of commentators, as I was reading about this chapter of James, that once they get past 8, they're confused by what 9 through 18 is there for. They feel like it's out of sequence, it doesn't fit, there's something just wrong about it. And then there's another group of commentators that looks at 1 through 8 that's all about being joyful about trials and all of those things, And that group says, here's an example of how that works. Some of you have stuff, some of you don't have stuff. Some of you view not having stuff as a trial that you have to persevere. Some of you ought to realize that having stuff is also a trial you have to persevere. And because of our humanity, we see one real clearly and not the other. And then we find ourselves being taken over by our desires. For some of us who don't have a lot, that don't look at that as high position, our desire is to have more. Our desire is to be more wealthy. Our desire is to not be worried about bills and how they're going to be paid. We just want it all to be taken care of. We struggle. And for us, it easily becomes sin. And so if we know that the sin begins with desire, then where do we begin to solve the sin problem? What do we desire? When you think about right now, the greatest desires that you have, what are they about? Are they things of God? Are they things of wanting to create a better relationship with God? Are they things you'd like? It's Christmas time, it's rolling around, you got a list made? What are your desires? Is it bad for other people that you desire? I'd like to see them get theirs. It's easy to get in that rut. What is your desire? And James, I think, would tell us here, let's turn those things around into a godly way. I think it's interesting that he starts with this high and low position, because this is the way Jesus talks in the Sermon on the Mount. This is the way Jesus talks throughout his ministry about rich and poor and first and last. That's the way he thinks about the way our world set things up. Everything is upside down. And so he says to change your desires so that you don't become stuck in this sin, because as he says here, sin, when it's grown, gives birth to death. The way Paul would write it is, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, in Romans 3:23. And then in 6:23, he'd say, the wages of sin is death. But then there's a flip side to that coin where he says, but the gift of God, eternal life in Christ Jesus. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights. Don't be deceived. And if there's one thing that a lot of us are good at, it's either deceiving or being deceived. If you turn on your TV today and you watch a lot of football because you didn't get enough college yesterday, you're going to get some pro football today, and you watch the commercials that come between possessions, you will be deceived a lot of times by those commercials. CenturyLink will tell you Comcast is bad. Comcast will tell you CenturyLink is bad. DirecTV will tell you both of them are bad. Somebody's got to be right. You will assume that if you were to pick up a beer, then suddenly your entire life is transformed into a party of some kind. Beautiful people will be around the pool that you don't have. And the weather on the coast is always perfect. Don't be deceived. You will assume, if you find yourself on the poor end of things, that if I just had wealth, it would all be okay. And the wealthy will tell you, doesn't fix it all. And sometimes the wealthy would say, if I could just get rid of all this, everything would be better, and it doesn't fix it all either. You get everything on your Christmas list or nothing on your Christmas list, doesn't change anything. One of the girls who got a Christmas box, I was looking on this website about them, there was a girl who opened her Christmas box up, and the only thing in it was a pair of shoes. And that pair of shoes was four sizes bigger than she was. All these kids around her, neat toys, fun things, making sounds, things to play with, pair of shoes is too big. And the folks involved said, you know, God has a way of working here. Maybe she has an older sister with no shoes. Wow, how do you get there? How do you get there? Because that's not where I'm at. Where I'm at is, that's not the thing that was on my list. That's not what I want. Don't be deceived. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. The gifts are from above. everything good comes from God. And more than that, as we see here later in the verse, he does not change like shifting shadows. You can count on him. You can count on when he gives you these things from above that they are the things that he desires to give you, the things that he desires for you to have. So when you get a challenge that comes your way, how am I going to use this for God? When you have one of those trials that we talked about 2 weeks ago, how can God use this to his glory? Don't be deceived. And this morning, I want you to think about for a minute as we close, what has got you deceived? What has got you deceived? And it's tough because for a lot of us, we can't see it because it's deceiving us. Sometimes people around us can see it a lot more clearly than us, but we don't want to listen to them because we're right and they're wrong. But something this morning has a lot of us deceived. Family stuff. They don't love me. They don't care about me because they don't do this. Well, there's times I don't do whatever too. Maybe it's church stuff. Not always going my way. It doesn't always go my way either. Work stuff. Maybe it's that neighbor that's got just that perfect life and you just wish you could have the life like that and you have no idea what's going on behind the doors when they close. Maybe it's wealth, like we read about it in James 1 here. Maybe you just want life to be easier. We get deceived by a lot of things in this life, and God would say to us, don't be deceived. Look around and see what I am doing in your life. Take a step back for a minute and understand how blessed we are. Take a step back for a minute and see what he does in our church. I stood back in the back 5 minutes before we started, and I said to Mike, where is everybody? Small crowd today. There are easily twice as many people sitting down right now as there were when I said that to him. I can find myself being deceived by the desire for whatever I'd like this church to be, or however many of us I would like it to be. Each of us has something that deceives us, and God would say, open your eyes. See more clearly and understand how I am at work. And if you find yourself easily deceived, get closer to him. Whether it's through reading his word, praying to him, finding someone else that's on that same road and walking it together instead of by yourself. Don't be deceived anymore today. And we are about to enter into the time of deception in our culture. Don't be deceived. Instead, understand where truth is, where it comes from, and how it can change our lives. If there are things that challenge you this morning, you are not alone. And we all find ourselves challenged by so many things. If there are things you would like to confess, things we can pray about, we're happy to do that. If you'd like to take him on in baptism for the first time, change your life, even happier to do that. Whatever need you may have this morning, please come as we stand and sing.